How much research went into it to find all those stories, like dating back to 1936 when Philadelphia chose Jay Berwanger from the University of Chicago? Like, you uncover all those things, and you know, his decision to decline to play in the NFL, was that like something that was expected, or was it a total complete shock to that many people?
It was not a shock because, as Berwanger said, they were only offering $100 per game. He can more money than that, for sure, in private business. And he got to the University of Chicago, so he's a pretty brilliant guy who didn't need the NFL. So, no, it was not shocking. And, of course, you're talking a little bit different money scale back then. Remember, back then, college football was so much more popular than the NFL that many of these players who played college football had, you know, no desire to go to the pros.
It's interesting, $100 a game, how times have changed. Now, I know the economy has changed, but, man, $100 a game to play a sport that's pretty vicious, for sure. When you were doing all of your research, what was the favorite story you uncovered for the book?
Well, my favorite stories, there's more than one, really have to do with the gurus of the draft, how that developed, how people like Gil Brandt, who to me is the godfather of draft knowledge, and Mel Kiper and Mike Mayock and Joel Buxbaum, how those guys became not only experts, but they created this cottage industry that is now the draft. And think about it. There's no action during a draft. There's no game. There's no field. There's no touchdowns. It's just basically conjecture, and it's a puzzle that's being put together. Yet these guys made a career out of either out of scouting or analyzing or just appearing on TV and giving their opinions. And that very much intrigued me when we were doing the book.
What I found very intriguing was, you know, how in-depth you go to the success stories, but also, you know, the busts. And it's interesting when, you know, Peyton Manning's draft, for instance, Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf. And when you go back to it, you know, Ryan Leaf really kind of rocketed up the draft board late, most likely because of his position more than anything else. And that, you know, this was a guy who was projected maybe as a mid-first rounder, but just kept gaining momentum, and went all the way to number two. And, you know, there were some people that felt it was, oh, geez, this is a real big decision. Ultimately, it wasn't. Do you see any similarities at all to this year's draft from the Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf draft?
But not with the two quarterbacks, no, because I think that clearly these two quarterbacks are in a better position to succeed than Ryan Leaf is. And yes, Jameis Winston has had his issues off the field, but talent-wise and training-wise with the pro offense in Florida State, he's much more prepared. And nowadays, these guys have much more of a support group than even Ryan Leaf had back in 1998. And then Mariota's, he may not go number two. I think that he will, although I don't know that it will be to the Titans. He's the kind of player you want on your team. Whether he's a franchise quarterback, I'm not sure, but he's the kind of guy that can lead, and he's the type of player that teammates love.
Outside of Winston and Mariota, which other offensive player do you think will be the most impactful NFL player?
Well, we should ask me that in 3 or 4 years. You a definite answer. Wow. I would have to say that Amari Cooper, the wide receiver from Alabama, will have a pretty good impact in the pros. I think if he's healthy and he's all recovered from his knee problems, that Todd Gurley, the running back from Georgia, also will. But running backs just don't have that kind of cachet these days in the draft. I think those guys are kind of heads above the other players at their positions on offense.
Barry Wilner from AP joins us talking about the draft, also author of the book. If you're an NFL fan, I highly recommend you check it out, On the Clock. It's available at Amazon online, and it's a bargain right now. It's only $10 Canadian, so you can check it out. Barry, when you look at it, you know, trades are obviously a big thing. And in the NFL, is it good or bad that they've kind of got this trade calculation where, you know, if you deal a number two pick, it's worth 400 points. You've got to get 400 points of value in picks in return. Is that a good thing, or does it kind of take away the ability for one GM to fleece another GM?
That's a great way of putting it. I think it works only because Every GM knows the parameters kind of set on what each pick is worth, and you really, you know, you really don't want to see a team getting fleeced. You'd rather see a trade work out where both teams get what they want. Having said that, if you really, really want a player, and the best example recently would be Robert Griffin III and the Redskins 3 years ago, if you really want that player, you'll find the right means to get him, even if you overpay. And no one will say that after RG3's rookie season that the Redskins overpaid. And then the injuries came and some strange coaching decisions, and now people will say, well, they probably did overpay. But if you really want that player, you find a way to make it go.
Barry Wilner joins us. On the defensive side, a lot of people are high, and of course, Leonard Williams and Dante Fowler Jr. Also, maybe Bud Dupree right now, I think, would probably be the top three-ranked defensive guys. Now, different positions, of course, from outside linebacker to defensive end. The Oakland Raiders, Barry, and just like that organization, like if you're a player, are you praying you don't get drafted there?
Not anymore. That may have been true 2 years ago, but if you're an offensive player, you don't mind going there because they have a young quarterback, Derek Carr, that probably is their guy for quite a while. And if you're a defensive player, they have Khalil Mack, who was one of the best defensive players last year as a rookie. They brought in Jack Del Rio, who's a defensive coach. So I don't think you mind going to the Raiders. And besides, if you pick number four in the draft, you're going to get some nice money. Further down in the draft, you know, maybe. But I think these guys, in general, they don't mind going almost anywhere unless you're going to a position on a team where you're not going to get to play for a long while. You know, let's say a quarterback winds up being drafted by the Indianapolis Colts. Well, you know, that's not such a great situation.
Okay. Yeah, very, very fair point there, right? A lot of times it's you got to be in the right situation for play. And because certain teams just have success. And is Bill Belichick a draft wizard? Maybe. Or the fact that they've just had a winning culture for so long, there's a better chance that those players come there and have success.
I think there are a lot of teams that have that reputation and, you know, deservedly so. The Patriots are not a great first-round drafting team, but they're very good when they go in other rounds, and they're very good at making deals to get more picks in the second and third rounds. And when you look at the Patriots roster, you're going to see, you mentioned Brady before, obviously he's an outlier compared to other quarterbacks. But when you look at their roster, you'll see that they've been very good lower in the draft. I mean, you know, Rob Gronkowski was a second-round pick, and as you go through a team like the Patriots, you're going to find a lot of players like that. There's a lot of teams, though, that really know how to work the draft.
Which team do you feel has a chance to have like the most impactful draft just based on what positions of weakness? Like when you did all your history of the draft, do you find there's more success drafting certain positions in the NFL?
I think what we found in the book was we hear that personnel people, general managers, even owners say, we don't draft the need, we draft the best player on the board. And we kind of found in our research that's not necessarily true, that in general, they're going to be drafting someone they need at one or two or three different positions, but they're not going to be drafting someone who's not going to play for a few years. So I think that that's very true. But the most impactful positions nowadays in the draft, to me, are obviously quarterback on offense and obviously a pass rusher, either a defensive end or a linebacker, and a cornerback. And teams will tell you, and this is definitely true, you can't have enough cornerbacks because of how the passing game is developed, and you can't have enough pass rushers.
Barry, one last one. I guess if you had to predict, which team do you think is most likely to trade up tonight, the first team to trade up in the draft, and why?
Okay, the two teams that have the most ammunition would be the Browns with two first-round picks and relatively high ones, and the Saints with two first-round picks. I could see either of them trading up, particularly if we start to see a run on players on a certain position that those teams need, and they have a guy they really want to get. But bear this in mind, and everyone has said it, and no one can predict what Chip Kelly will do in Philadelphia, but most people think that he still is in the market for Marcus Mariota, and if he is, then you will see the Eagles making a bold move to try to get up.
Yeah, to move from number 20 to number 2 is significant. It would almost have to be in stages, no?
It would have to be something similar to what the Redskins did, the trade the Redskins pulled off to get RG3, where you'd have to probably give up some future draft picks. And yes, it may take more than one step, but that's a hard thing to do. The one thing I will say is if for some reason Winston goes 1 and then someone else such as Leonard Williams goes number 2 to Tennessee, then you're going to see even more teams looking to trade up and try to get Mariota. And on the other hand, if for some reason Tampa doesn't take Winston, which I would be very surprised about, then the market really opens up because there are a lot of teams that believe they can handle any of Winston's off-field problems, and they would be getting the most dynamic player in this draft.
Which quarterback ultimately do you think will have a better career, Mariota or Winston?
Ooh, wow. I think it all depends on the team they go to and the coaching staff they wind up with. I know I'm backdooring this one by not giving you a full answer. But I would say that for pure talent on the NFL level, Winston is a better pro-type quarterback. But we've seen in the recent years with guys like Russell Wilson that the Mariota-type quarterback can succeed too. I wouldn't mind having each of them on my team as long as there's no off-field issues.
Barry, I appreciate your time. I really appreciate the book. Great work.
All right, Jason. It's a fun time, isn't it?